He is one of South Africa's top labor lawyers. He's a politician and member of parliament. And now you can access Michael Bagrum as he talks law and life on High FM. Join Michael Bagrum at 6 p.m. for Bagrum on Law and Life, 101.9 High FM, 101.9 megahertz of life and law.
Thank you. Thanks for joining us this evening on a cold Tuesday evening. It's Michael Bagrum every single Tuesday evening from 6 to 7. And every Tuesday evening, we have interesting guests joining us. And I will introduce you to my guest in a few minutes' time. He is with us already. Obviously, we're all worrying, we're all fretting, and a real issue that as a Jewish people the world over are in a state of shock. We're in a terrible space, but look, we've got to have prayers, we've got to have a way forward, and let's all pray that everything goes well. And I'm going to have a bit of fun tonight, so let's take our mind off it for a few minutes. And thank you for joining me. We're on Fire FM 101.9. And if you want to WhatsApp me, 061-895-1019, 061-895-1019. If you want to email me, it's bags@highfm.com, B-A-G-S at highfm, one word, .com. And if you want to give us some ideas, suggestions, anyone that you want me to interview in the future, please let me know. If you have any comments about this program, please let me have these comments. Always feedback to our guest, and it makes for interesting reading and for discussions. But like I do every single Tuesday evening, before we start, I have a look at a book that I've been recently reading. I've only been reading this for 2 days now. It's a book called In Sacred Memory. Now, a lot of you might remember the first volume. This is volume two. The first volume, In Sacred Memory, was Recollections of the Holocaust by Survivors Living in Cape Town. And we've just had volume two printed and done by the Cape Town Holocaust Center. I thank them for this. But, of course, my favorite lady, edited by Gwen Schwerer. She's put it out, and Gwyn, if you're listening tonight, is absolutely wonderful volume. And if anyone wants to purchase a copy, you can get it from the Cape Town Holocaust Center or Cape Town Holocaust and Genocide Center. All the proceeds go to them. So thank you, Gwyn, for that as well. It is absolutely wonderful. And of course, as we're sitting on a very precarious time of our history, a time when we're all praying, it's always good to go back and have a look at what people went through during the Holocaust. It's really well written. It's fantastic stories. And of course, if any of you had read In Sacred Memory, the first volume, you would know what you're in for the second one. So it's worth getting hold of. It's called In Sacred Memory, Volume 2, and edited by Gwyn Schwerer. And worthwhile getting a copy. And it's also worthwhile buying it as gifts for people. So thank you. Yes, thanks for coming on air. And I'm going to introduce you to Howard Goldberg. Howard Ivor Goldberg. I've known Howard since, the late 50s. I think it was when we were both running around kicking a soccer ball in the park. So I've known him for many, many years. Howard has got a long history with the, obviously, the Cape Town Jewish community, in that he taught at United Herzliya Schools. I think he started working in 1982. So you're getting a bit gray, Howard, in 1982.
That's for sure. Yeah.
I know that in 1998 you went to the Boston House College, but before that, teaching at the school in 2006 to 2011, you were the principal of Herzliya Weizmann Primary. That's a Seapoint Herzliya Primary School. I know, and I had constant feedback about your principalship, if you can call it that, at the school from a teacher there, Barbara Donan, happens to be my neighbor, who always used to come back and sing praises about Howard Goldberg. So I never thanked you then, but well done.
Thank you, Bags.
Thank you. And Barbara has always sung your praises as to what a wonderful school you ran at the time. And I'm going to ask you a little bit about that history with Herzliya Schools and your background to that. And then we're going to come on to your presidentship of the World Boxing Federation, the WBF. I know very little about boxing, although I did go to one of your events. You invited me. I was very happy to be at one of your events. I want to then go through that. But I know you've got a long, almost longer than my arm, where you played chess. You were a winner of several open events. You represented South Africa at Maccabi Games for both chess and tennis. That's quite something. And then I know you played Premier League tennis and squash, and you played soccer. You were a boxing promoter, etc. Now, I'm going to start right at the beginning, Howard, if you don't mind. First of all, tell us a little bit about your background, your upbringing. What brought you into all these strange and varied sports?
Okay, so the family, originally came from Kimberley, came to Cape Town. We lived in Cape Town in a Ranjzuk near you. And correct. What you omitted, Bags, is that your mother, your late mom, and my late mom worked together in a Jewish pre-primary school.
Absolutely, they were best friends.
That was a long, long time ago.
Yeah.
Anyway, I went to school. I went to Hertz Theatre Standard 5 in the old days. I went to Cape Town High, finished, went to the army, had 1 year of chess, traveled the country, and went to the army. And then, suddenly I went to the Maccabi Games. I had no idea what I wanted to do. And I was on the diving board at one of the hotels in Tel Aviv. And the late Mike Kessel, who you knew very well, fantastic man, a real inspiration to me. I was about to dive off the board, and he shouted to me, he said, "What are you doing next year?" I said, "I have no idea." And he said to me, "Well, come work at Hertzsteer." And I said, "Well, I don't even know if I want to teach." And he said, "Don't dive until you say yes." And I said, "Yes." And the next year I was at Hertzsteer. I spent from 1982, till 1997 at Hertzsteer. I headed the economics department, the commerce department. I was a senior vice principal. And it was a school with so much soul at that time that teachers couldn't wait to get in. We used to rush in the morning to see who'd be in first. We had a staff team that went to general knowledge quizzes. In 1997, I left. I became the principal of Boston. And after 4 years, I went to Abbott's, taught there for a couple of years. And then Owen Futren phoned me and said, "Come for an interview for Hertzsteer Weizmann." And I said to him, "I've never done primary school, Owen. What are you talking about?" And he said to me, "Come to the White House," which is our admin house at Hertzsteer, 12 o'clock on Sunday. I arrived at 12 o'clock. Not a soul was there. Quarter past 12, not a soul was there. 20 past 12, Dennis Davis arrived. Dirty.
Can I hold you there? We're going to have a quick one-minute advert. You stay on air, but we're going to have a quick. We're going to pay the bills.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Thank you for being with me this evening. It's Michael Bagram. I'm speaking from Cape Town with a guest. Cape Town is a little bit chilly, not as bad as Johannesburg, and it's slightly inclement as well. And I am with a wonderful guest, Howard Goldberg, who's taking us through some of his background, and in particular his background as a teacher and then principal with the United Hertzsteer Schools. And he was telling us about his first interview to become the principal of Hertzsteer Weizmann, the Seapoint Hertzsteer Primary School, where he had invited him to come on a Sunday afternoon, and they weren't present. I think the anxiety would have killed me at that point, Howard, but you said that Dennis Davis arrived.
Dennis arrived at 20 past 12. He'd just come down from the mountain, dirty and bedraggled and everything else. And then Owen arrived at half past, and everyone came in their dribs and drabs. We had an interview. I said to them, "The boxing comes with, otherwise, you know, let's just have a cup of coffee together." And Owen said to me, he was the chairman at the time, he said to me, "We've got a couple of shortlisted people. I'll get back to you in the next week or two." And not 3 hours later, he phoned me and offered me the job.
Oh, well done.
Which was quite interesting, Bags, because I'd never done primary school ever. I'd done high school. I'd lectured at the Cape Peninsula University. And I'll never forget my first day. There was a naughty little boy who came into my office with a teacher. And I said to him, why did you do that? You're not eight. He said, I am eight. And I suddenly realized it was a completely different idea. But I spent 5 years there. And I started to travel a lot for the boxing. And Jeff Cohn, who was the director of education, came to me and said to me, you can't do both anymore. We want you to stay, but you can't do both. And I made a decision there and then to pursue my love for boxing.
Okay, but just have a look at those 5 years at the school. You took, in fact, two generation of Seapoint Jewish children through their schooling, and many, many fondly look back and tell us about your interaction with them. You were a very hands-on principal, and like I said, Barbara Donan, I can't remember what grade she taught at the time, but she said she
grade,
never...
Grade two. Yeah, I remember well.
She had never seen someone, because she had been teaching her whole life, had seen someone who was so interactive with the children, whatever their problem, whatever the issue, and your encouragement all the time. So thank you for that. The school owes you a debt of gratitude. But then you went on to the boxing world. Tell us why boxing. Did you ever box yourself? Or it's not a sport for a good Jewish boy, but tell us a bit about it.
I had one fight by accident in the army when Johannes van der Westhuizen's opponent didn't turn up and I volunteered. And to this day, I can still see stars from where Johannes hit me. And I won the fight, and somebody said to me, you know, you're not so bad. And I said, that's it, guys. One fight, I'm going to retire undefeated. And then the late Simi Lewis, I think you know Simi.
Yes, of course.
Simi was in charge of the Cape Town Chess Club. He was the president and probably one of the world's best boxing statisticians. And I used to go play chess with him. And one day he said, no chess, we're going to boxing. And he told me how to score a fight. And I sat at ringside with him and I scored. And Marcus Temple, the chairman of the Western Cape Boxing, said to me, what are you doing? I said, I'm scoring. He said, can I see? I said, sure. And he said, this is very, very accurate. Do you want to join? And I did my first fight as a judge in 1978.
Yeah, before most of our listeners were born.
Probably.
Yeah. And then you were bitten by the sport itself. Were you able to?
Absolutely. I became a referee and a judge. I got onto a world panel. I did over 100 world title fights. And then I decided in 2002, possibly, I wanted to give up boxing as a referee. I wanted to promote. I promoted, I think it was 4 shows. I hated it. And then I became a supervisor for the WBF. And eventually in 2008, we went to Magdeburg in East Germany for a fight. And they offered me to become the president of the World Boxing Federation, which was quite interesting because I asked them why. And I had some tremendously positive feedback as to the reasons why.
Well, let me take you a little bit backwards. Obviously, you had to go and study the rules and regulations. And obviously, also the World Boxing Federation has their own set of rules and governing bodies, etc. A lot of politics, I presume, and a lot of studying. Tell us a little bit about the background where you qualified yourself.
There are rules and regulations, but they're actually quite uniform amongst the world bodies. And once you know the rules, I used to, before every fight, go through the rules over and over again, so I knew them backwards. And as a supervisor now, as the president, I don't referee or judge, obviously, but I supervise title fights. And I go through the rules and regulations with both fighters and their camps. I go through the medical guidelines with the doctors at the event. So I almost know the rules word by word nowadays. It's always easy to ref a boxing fight until something out of the ordinary happens.
Which probably happens every fight.
It happens occasionally. I mean, the best fight I ever refereed, I could have sat on a chair and watched. They never held, they never clinched, they just boxed and they were fantastic. And then there was a boxer called Jimmy Murray, who I hated to referee because he was all gangly arms, and I'll never forget, I had to referee his fight, and I arrived and I said, oh, I played soccer yesterday, I'm a bit stiff. Let me judge rather, let Eddie referee. They said, okay. So I got out of it.
Okay, so Just tell me, so, I mean, obviously, when you talk about other federations, how many boxing federations are there, and is there a plethora? I know nothing about the sport, so fill us in.
So traditionally, there are the four big ones, which are the WBA, the WBC, the WBO, and the IBF. Morals and ethics, we won't talk about. And then the next level is the IBO and us, the WBF, and then they're the Nachschleppers. So we're in 45 countries. We've had big Roy Jones, who's a big name, Evander Holyfield, who's a big name, Clarissa Shields, who's the top woman in the world today, who earns $1 million a shot. They all have all been our champions. So we've had some really good champions. And we've been
When you hold fights, it's all within your umbrella. In other words, you don't have people going from one federation to the other federation and boxing against each other, or how does it actually work?
Sometimes there are unification fights. Sometimes a fighter will win a title and then get offered a lot of money to fight for another title, another sanctioning body. So, you know, in the old days, there were two sanctioning bodies and there were there's 17 weight divisions. So you would expect there to be 17 world champions. One of the top four have got 47 world champions. And you don't have to be a mathematical genius to work out that doesn't work. Boxing has become a business. It's no longer a sport.
I'd like
to share with you that...
We're going to hear some of them tonight, hopefully. We've got a little bit of time, but not... Nothing too saucy, please, but it's a family program.
It's going to be in the book, but I'll tell you two quick stories.
Yeah.
The one happened actually last year. We had a fight in Nigeria, and I fly a lot. I know all the airlines, and we went on a new airline called TAG, T-A-G, T-A-A-G, which is Angolan Airlines. And we left Cape Town. I went with a referee from Johannesburg. I met him in Johannesburg. It was 40 degrees in Cape Town. I was in shorts. I was in a T-shirt. I was in my tackies. And I knew that I'd be fetched in Nigeria. I'd go to the hotel. I'd have a shower. I'd have a shave, put on smart clothes, and meet everybody. Didn't work out exactly like that. So what happened was we had a 12-hour delay in Johannesburg. Got to Luanda. Had another 12-hour delay in Luanda. I was sweating and... smelling and irritated and needed sleep, etc., etc.
Completely formatted.
More than that. We get onto the plane eventually with a lot of Nigerians, and one Nigerian says, I have Father Magudulela on the phone. He wants to send a message. And the plane is slowly moving, ready to take off. So there's silence in the plane, and Father Magudulela says, my brothers, my sisters, greetings from Father. Get off the plane now, otherwise you will all die. So there's the turmoil on the plane. Anyway, the plane takes off. We land in Nigeria. Everything's fine. We land in Lagos. Now we've got to take a flight to a place called Port Harcourt. And we get there, and this is almost 3 days without having a shower and without changing clothes. And I'm sweating and I'm irritated. The plane lands. We get whisked off the plane, myself and the referee, into the VIP section. And there are 20 odd people in black suits and a guy with a crown. And I said to the guy, who's that? That's the king of Port Harcourt. I said, okay. And I said to my referee, let's walk behind them so they don't see us. So I said, by the way, who are they there to meet? They're there to meet us.
So you were completely destroyed and you had to go and meet the king.
They're dancing girls and there are flowers and there's a band, etc. And we get into his limousine, Persian carpets, Nochal. And off we go to the hotel, and we pass this big hangar, and he says, this is my church. I'm also the apostle. I said, okay, very nice. He says, I've got 10,000 congregants. I said, great. Get to the hotel. Everything's fine. I have a shower. I have a shave. I clean up, etc. Meet everybody. Next night, we go to the king for supper. 10:30, he says, I'm going to take you back to the hotel, but first we'll stop at the church. I said, how long will we be there? 30 minutes. We go to the church. It's like a rock stage. It's like somebody like Madonna on a rock band. The demeanor changes from the soft-spoken king to the... anyway, and they're putting money in baskets and they're all in white, etc. And he said to me before, will you just say the boxing will be next Saturday night? I said, okay, fine. 5 hours, Bags, we sit on the stage. I go out the back door. There's a back door on the stage. And I say to his manager, I need to go back to the hotel. He said, hang on the phone. The king wants you on the stage. Okay, no problem. I go stand next to the king. The king says, this is the president of the WBF, and now he will deliver a sermon to you.
He gave him a drosha.
I said, I beg your pardon? He says, for 10 minutes, 10 minutes. I think to myself, what am I going to do? So I improvised. Hello, brothers. Hello, sisters. God is great. Hallelujah. My wife saw the video. She laughed so much. Never seen anything like that. Anyway, next day I get a phone call from the king. Can you do a full hour sermon tonight? I said, pity, I've got a Zoom with my executive. I just can't do tonight, but maybe next year. So I became, the apostle for the night. And those are things that happened to me. Yeah, it was an experience.
Well, I know you've been traveling right through Africa, but you've also been to some interesting European locations. I often get hold of you and you're in some strange places. Tell us about one or two of the places that you've been to.
Goodness, I've been to last year we did Malta, we did the Ukraine, we did Poland, Korea, France, Germany, Tanzania, Nigeria, etc. Ukraine was interesting because you can't fly into the Ukraine. You have to take a train from Poland. And what happens after you cross the border, after an hour, the train stops. And the Ukraine guards and the soldiers come on with their guns and there's dogs. And they confiscate everybody's passport. And they've got a house about 200 meters away. And they take all the passports to the house. They check everybody. And then they come back and they say, fine, off you go. They come to my compartment. I'm there with two Ukrainian women. And we give the passports. And the Ukrainian soldier, the woman soldier, looks at me, looks at my passport. And she says, in a very lovely Ukrainian accent, you'll come with me. Off I go off the train. The only one, 1,000 on the train, my muzzle, I've got to go off. I go to the house. They check my passport across the snow, a foot of snow. And I was there for 5 minutes. They came back. They said, everything's fine. You can go back. I said, well, can you take me back? I don't know where my compartment is. They said, no, you'll go by yourself. Anyway, I found my compartment and then off we went to Ukraine. Ukraine was very, Ukraine felt like Sea Point, but you knew in the air it was very, very tense. And nothing happened while I was there. But the day after I left, Kiev, where we went to, got bombed. So,
you're lucky. Just lucky.
And then Can
I take you to the convention held in Cape Town? I got sort of involved in the sidelines with a little bit of the convention held in Cape Town. That was in 2000, am I correct?
We've had two conventions. The WBF have had one, which was in 2023. And the WBU, which I was a member and a referee at the time, we held one at the President Hotel in Cape Town. And we've had visitors from probably close to 20 countries. We do medical seminars. We do referee seminars. We took them up Table Mountain. They said they had the time of their life. I mean, Cape Town is just fantastic.
And it's good. And I know boxing is a very popular sport in Cape Town. And I know that you've been pushing very hard to ensure that you bring foreign boxers through here. I know you've brought one or two world championships to Cape Town itself.
We have a world champion in Cape Town who unfortunately has not defended his title and may have it vacated as a result. Because of the lack of finances for the promoters.
No.
It's very political, and their regions and their areas that the Eastern Cape and Gauteng and KwaZulu-Natal put money into boxing. Unfortunately, at this moment, the Cape Town has not done that. There have been promises, and to lose a world champion without him defending his title is catastrophic. And it sends out the wrong message, actually. So,
I understand that. And of course, you're pointing fingers at the Democratic Alliance, and I understand that. I met that world champion when you couldn't make it that day, but I met up with some of your people and your world champion. I can't remember his name. And we went to Mayor Jordan Hill Lewis. I don't know if you recall that day. And we did a photo shoot and explained that the local government and the provincial government need to dig deep into their pockets. I'm going to, just before you answer all that and keep you on this thought, let's come off air and we'll come back on in a minute or so.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Thank you. Thanks for coming back on air. And I'm with you again, Michael Bagram, every Tuesday evening between 6 and 7. We have a wonderful guest. If you haven't been with us this evening, I'll tell you a little bit of the background of our guest. But if you want to send a WhatsApp, 061-895-1019. Want to send an email, it's bags, B-A-G-S, at highfm, one word, .com. And I'm here tonight with a wonderful fellow, an old friend, an old family friend, Howard Goldberg. Howard is taking us through some of his history. First of all, his history as a teacher at United Herzliya Schools, and then as a principal at Weitzman Primary in Sea Point, part of the United Herzliya Schools. His background was he played Western Province chess. He went around the country playing chess. He represented South Africa at the Maccabi Games for both chess and tennis. He played first league soccer, and he in fact is now talking to us about some of his exploits and his current career as a in the boxing field. He supervised over 200 world title boxing fights. He's conducted training for boxing officials in 15 countries around the world, and has organized the World Boxing Union Convention in Cape Town in 2000. And then he said he also organized the World Boxing Federation World Convention in Cape Town in 2023. I know I was invited to one of the discussions at the World Boxing Federation in Cape Town in 2023. And Howard, I thank you for that. And I thank you for our friendship over these many years. Now, you were just telling us a little bit about one of your exploits and what transpired. And I'm sorry I cut in there early on. Over to you.
No, the other story, which is a quick one, is that we had a fight in Cameroon and we stopped in Kenya at Nairobi, and we had to change planes. And when we checked in, our luggage was missing. And I said to them, where's the luggage? And they said, this plane is overbooked. There are more Kenyans on the plane. We'll send you your luggage plus the world title boxing belts in 3 days' time. I said, but the world title's in 2 days. The president of the country will be handing out the belt. I need it. They said, we're not debating with you. We're informing you. I said, okay. Aye. And I was with the late Eddie Marshall. You knew Eddie Marshall.
No, I did know him, certainly.
A wonderful man, a wonderful, absolute, one of the special guys. And we walked down onto the tarmac, and I said to Eddie, get in the plane. And he looked at me strangely. He said, what are you doing? I said, I will not let this plane leave until we get our luggage. And I stood in front of the plane with my hands up. And they said, get on the plane, sir. I said, bring my luggage. And eventually six soldiers came down, brown uniforms, helmets, guns, and faced me. It was like a firing squad. And they said to me, get on the plane, sir. I said, no, bring my luggage. And it felt like an hour, but it was probably maybe 2 or 3 minutes. And they had a little scrum. They ran up the stairs, came back with our luggage, and got on. And when I tell people the story, they say, we're not sure it was exactly like that. And Eddie Marshall took pictures from inside the plane. And it's in my book with the pictures of me standing like an idiot. I mean, when I got back, my wife, she said, are you absolutely crazy? But we got the belt and we got the luggage and we did the world title and it was very successful. So there are lots
and
of...
Was the president there?
The president in Cameroon handed out the belt. So, you know, it ended well, but it could have ended very differently. So, but it's in the book with a few photos.
Now, when I went to Mayor Jordan Hill Lewis in Cape Town with your world boxing champion, we were, I made him stand and look like he was going to box against Jordan Hill Lewis. And just quickly to go back to one of your stories where you were trying to get some sponsorship from the city of Cape Town. And I was with a Mr. Bryce with me because you couldn't make it that day. And I whispered to the world champion, I said, he won't give you any money. Give him a good smack. At that point, I saw Jordan Hill Lewis jump back like and feel like a guy was about half his size, but yeah. He jumped back. What's he? Is he a bantamweight or what? What is he? Is he a lightweight box?
He's a super featherweight. It's about 62 kilos.
Okay. Well, that's the point.
A very talented fighter who did not get the credit from the city that he deserves. And I'm sorry to say that, but it's the truth. You know, he's a world champion. We haven't had a world champion in Cape Town for 20 odd years. And he was a really good world champion. And by rights, I should have vacated his title. You know, I've got a contender in France who would love to fight for the title, but not against Lunga, the champion. And of course, it boils down to economics and costs and, you know, et cetera. But for Lunga to defend in his own city would have been fantastic. Would have just been something special. And unfortunately,
has he kept himself fit, and is he able to actually get in the ring, or is that history?
He has been training. Very sadly, Emil Bryce, who was his trainer, passed away a few weeks ago, and his partner Alan Dillon has kept the training going. They have former world champion Mzonki Fana training the boys, and they're looking for fights. But we don't have many promoters in Cape Town, and they don't get any financial support. Television is very scarce, and it's difficult. It's a difficult situation for them.
Well, look, I know that you've been the world president of the World Boxing Federation for many. How long have you been the world president now?
17 years.
Oh, wow. And have you had anyone popping their head over the parapet threatening your position?
In 1990, I was in Las Vegas at the Luxor Hotel. I was staying with a friend of mine, Mervyn Brody, he's a lawyer, now a judge in Arizona. And I was staying with him and his wife, and we went to a show in Las Vegas. Tyson was making his comeback. And Tucker, with our muzzle, we're walking along. There were very wide corridors at the Luxor Hotel. And there comes Tyson with his entourage. There must have been 20 of them. And I pointed and I said to Mervyn, there's Tyson. And he saw me point. And he was young and very angry in those days. And he walked.
Mervyn or Tyson?
Tyson. Mervyn ready to run. Anyway, long story short is that Tyson said to me, have you got a problem with me? And he pointed his finger in my face. And I whispered to Mervyn, I said, get ready to run. And I pointed back. I said, I don't have a problem with you. Do you have a problem with me? And his entourage said, Mike, it's not worth it. You know, he wants you to have a fight and, you know, walk away. And he looked at me, in the eye as if he was going to kill me. And about 15 years later, we were in China together. And I said to him, do you remember you almost hit me? And he said, I almost hit so many people. I really don't remember hitting, you know, almost hitting you. And he's become very mellow. Evander Holyfield also the same. They're friends of mine. They, you know, that's the connections that I have at the moment. You know, I meet good people.
So from what I understand is that you're active in 45 countries around the world, as in the World Boxing Federation.
We'll make it 46 in 2 weeks because I'm off to Jamaica.
Okay.
And I've never been. I better Jamaica it happen. And what I've said to them is, don't make me arrive the day before the fight. You know, I need a week to lie on the beach and just, you know, readjust. And anyway, let's see what happens.
As long as you don't smoke anything silly, don't do that. But I can introduce you. I know the ambassador from South Africa to Jamaica. So please let me know when you're leaving, and I'll put you in touch with her. She's as mad as a hatter, but it's a decent person. So I'll put you in touch. But just tell me what does the actual world president of the World Boxing Federation do? What do you actually do? But before you answer that, we've got to pay the bills. So let's take an ad break. Stay on air, but we have a bad.
I've got to pay the bills. I've got to make sure that my website man is up to
date. Well, hold on. We're going to do an ad break. We're going to pay our bills.
Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
Thank you. And now we've paid the bills for Hi FM. You're back with Michael Bagram and Howard Goldberg. Howard is the world president of the World Boxing Federation. They operate in 45 countries. He's hoping to add one soon to 46 countries, to Jamaica. He was just about to tell us what his role is. He started off by saying he's got to make sure that the World Boxing Federation pays its bills. Tell us about what your activities, your daily activities. I presume it keeps you busy all this time.
It does keep me busy. I liaise with the various commissions, boxing commissions around the world. I liaise with promoters. I get phone calls from managers. We have representatives in each country, so I'm busy talking to the representatives. At 3 o'clock tomorrow morning, I'll probably get a call from Mexico or America saying, oh, we forgot the time difference. You know, this is where we're at. This is the fight that we propose to put on. I meet with promoters. I meet with fighters. We advise our champions as to the direction they should take. We're busy, and you know, we have to keep up to date with medical guidelines, etc. We set high standards, and we ensure that those high standards are maintained and kept and even improved upon.
So it keeps you busy every single day.
Well,
am I correct?
Not every day. Wednesday's a golf day, so.
Oh, okay. Well, you've got to have someone. Otherwise, you're going to be very dull. You must have some leisure time.
I can't master bags. I can't master it.
Yeah. Well, I can't even pick up one of those sticks. So don't worry about it. At least you play. But from what I understand is you get involved very much with the marketing and with all the stakeholders. You make sure that fights go smoothly, that you have the proper advertising for it, and that things work in the various countries where you're active.
The hour before we went on the air, I'd spoken to Georgia, I'd spoken to Egypt, and I'd spoken to Germany. Just a discussion about the fight in Egypt. I spoke to the head of the Georgian Commission, fantastic woman, so organized. I was there about 4 weeks ago, and I spoke to my executive director in Germany about a fight that's coming up. And the officials, we have to assign officials from all over the world, so we're busy. But I still have a cup of coffee with you, you know.
Yeah, absolutely, and I'm looking forward to that. But in essence, what I do understand is that when you put on these World Boxing Federation, I don't know, how often do you have the conventions? Is it every year or every second year? How often is that?
We try to have it every third year. Obviously the other sanctioning bodies, the big ones, have their conventions. Some have it every 2 years. The IBO, who are on the level with us, don't have a convention. But we regard ourselves more as a family than anything else. So the World Boxing Council will have 1,000 delegates. We don't want that. We want 100 delegates so that you can sit down next to anybody and strike up a conversation and you know them. So we always call ourselves a family sanctioning body. And we're very, very intertwined with everybody. Everyone knows everybody. And it's a lot of fun.
Okay. Now, what I also know is that you have people who help you wherever you are. And I know, for instance, a boxing promoter, Jackie Bryce, who I keep in touch with often. He always sings your praises, and he's always telling me how much work you're doing. And he doesn't know how you cut yourself into so many pieces, helping everyone, helping the actual boxers, you're training people. You're doing all sorts of things that he keeps telling me about. Where do you find the time? Because I also know that you train chess. You're still training some people in chess. Am I correct?
I have about 5 or 6 prodigies that I teach, and I teach at 3 poor schools, 3 under or disadvantaged schools in the Western Cape, which is their highlight. They're 40, 45, 50 kids in the class. We make it entertaining, we make it fun, and they absolutely, they adore their chess. And I do that in the mornings early. I try to get my wife coffee every morning. That's going to be a good husband as well. And I have the time. I juggle. You know, so I meet people occasionally just for a cup of coffee, just to unwind and to relax. But, you know, when I'm finished with you here, I've got to get back. I've got four calls, missed calls on my phone that I need to deal with. And three are easy, one's a little bit complicated. But, you know, that's what I do. It's my passion. I would do it. I get to see the world. I get to boxing, which I love. I've been to, my daughter worked it out to 65 countries in my life.
Oh, wow. Well, we're coming to the witching hour, and I want to thank you. I want to dedicate this program to your late brother, Alan, who happened to be a wonderful friend of mine and a practicing attorney and a colleague of mine, and he passed away, and we all miss him greatly. I know you do. So I do want to dedicate this program to him. But thank you, Howard. Howard Goldberg is the president of the World Boxing Federation. He was an ex-principal at the junior school at the United Herzliya Schools. Howard, thank you very much for spending some time with us this evening and giving us a little peep into the world of boxing federations. So I really appreciate it. And lots of love to your family. Thank you ever so much.
Thank you very much, Bags. I appreciate the time, and thanks for having me.
Thank you. Thanks.